Jesse Wiseman's Crime Corner is not suitable for all audiences. It is created by and intended for the fun and flirty. Listener discretion is advised.
Looking for a new crime show to binge? I know you are. From the crew at Drinking Bros Podcast and Tetherball Academy Media comes Crime Corner with Jesse Wiseman. Described as a crime show that is more like how you talk with your friends or spouse while watching Dateline, Crime Corner covers cases untouched by other true crime shows, as well as the heavy hitters and the occasional serial killer.
Roger was beating his wife. The hammer, he shot him 2 times, he fell back. So when Detective Charlie Cox, you guys, every time there's a detective in the 80s, their names are amazing, right?
I love that it's real.
911 call from the Winger's home. We're going to listen to that now.
Oh, shit.
Check the place.
Yes, hold me.
What's the problem?
I just saw this man in my house.
He's inside your house.
He beat my wife.
Is he in there right now?
Yes.
Does he have a gun?
My planes are everywhere.
You can find Crime Corner with Jesse Wiseman wherever you listen to podcasts. And video is now available on Spotify.
Okay, I still don't believe that Face Off.
Oh, God. We're not doing this.
Look,
we're
not
moving on.
We
can't do it again.
Talked about
it
before.
We cannot do it again.
You're not changing my mind.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back to Macabre, a dark history podcast. The hunt for the occult underground in Paris continues in this Affair of the Poison series. Part 2. Image is everything. On March 12, 1679, Catherine Malvoisin stepped outside of her parish church, Notre Dame du Bon Nouvel, in Paris. She was met by officials, then suddenly under arrest. The police had found incriminating evidence on her premises. Catherine wasn't ignorant. She knew what this meant for her. And suppose it was only a matter of time before her life as divineress Lavoisin was brought to the light. Catherine de Chailly was born into a poor family where education was limited. As a young girl, she would take to the streets to make a few coins by offering fortune readings to those who passed her by. She claimed that she was taught the art of fortune-telling by the age of 9. It said many of her fortunes came true. Catherine said it was a gift from God and would stand by this proclamation until her death. She would become known for her face and palm readings. She thought when she was married to Antoine Malvoisin, a silk merchant, that life would be more stable, especially after the jewelry store he opened in Paris. But within a few years, both of his business ventures would fall through, and they would be bankrupt. Once more, Catherine Malvoisin would have to do what she knew best, tell fortunes. It wasn't enough to just give face and palm readings anymore. No, she had to make a name for herself. She had to expand her skills, establish a profession. She sought after medical knowledge, collected books on remedies and alchemy. Catherine decided she would study to become a midwife. It wasn't long before she became a midwife. Women entrusted her skills and she quickly became known around the area as Lavoisin. She was a hard worker and knew how to sustain a living. but with the weight of supporting her husband, children, and her mother, who also lived with them, it was clear they couldn't survive on the income as a midwife with occasional fortune-telling on the side. She had to do more. It was time for her to start her own business venture. The macabre conclusion she came to was highly dangerous and illegal at the time. Abortion. She could be fined, imprisoned, beaten, banished, or even put to death. But that was a risk she was willing to take. She had to keep with this secretive practice, something that would only be hushed about in the underbelly of Paris. And clients did come. The desperate, the unwed, the victims of assault, they all came to her. To get rid of the evidence, she would burn the fetuses and buried what remained within her garden. Her reputation grew. And soon, it wasn't just tattered skirts under cloaks that she saw, but fine silks and linens. Word had spread of her skills from the poorer parts of Paris to the corset-clad richer bourgeoisie. Catherine Malvoisin was becoming an answer to a lot of France's dark wishes. The demand grew, and so did her prices. Before she knew it, she couldn't keep up with the clientele. So she hired on a network of underground abortion providers who would work under her orders and carry out requests that she couldn't fit into her schedule. Soon, her midwife practice was a front for secret dealings that escalated from abortions to occultism and black masses. Despite all this, she still attended Catholic Mass regularly. All of her practices that made her occupation were seen as illegal and under many categories of sin under the church law. And in 1665, she was under arrest of suspicion by a priest. She was interrogated by a group of scholars and professors who questioned if her fortune-telling was legitimate. She stood before them, answering their questions, when she finally proclaimed that her ability to tell fortunes was a gift from God. After this, she was promptly released. This was a warning, a very real reminder that even though her purse bulged at the seams and her influence stuck to those with power like the hairpins in their wigs, she was fallible. One wrong utterance of a gossiper's tongue would be the end of her. Instead of reigning in her practice and laying low for a while, she took her business to the next level. She had appealed to more of the aristocracy, but she couldn't do that without creating an image for herself. After all, wasn't that what the rich did? Wear their wealth, literally, on their sleeve? Well, then she would do the same. She dealt out a heavy sum of 1,500 livres for a crimson robe with eagles embroidered in gold to give her the look of a mystic and alchemist who dabbled with what lied in the shadows. It made her seem more reputable. In turn, the robe paid for itself. Her clientele expanded in numbers and wealth. She had a list of individuals who were in the same circles as the king. She learned that it didn't matter where one landed on the social pole. Everyone wanted something. The poor wanted riches, and the rich wanted more power, and everyone wanted love. People went to great lengths to get what they wanted. She pushed herself to her limits with how many hours in a day she received clients. Many saw her as a solution to their problems. She had gained enough influence to socialize with a society high above the humble one she grew up in. She began hosting lavish parties at her residence where she would play the violin. Catherine took on several lovers. Not just any lovers. A count, a viscount, an architect, and a magician, to name a few. She had the deepest connection with Adam Lesage, an occultist and alchemist who worked in her network as a professional poisoner and magician. He was often in charge of the magical rituals clients purchased. He begged her to kill her husband, promising that if she were a widow, he would marry her. He even offered to carry out the task. Initially, she agreed, but before Adam could go through with it, she stopped him. After that, things changed between them. He still worked for her organization, but the tension grew. He would be arrested and let go under the same suspicions Lavoisin had been accused of. As plots thickened in aristocratic circles over purchases of love potions and poisons, rumors were spreading in the French underground. Lavoisin and her network had become the envy of other fortune tellers, poisoners, alchemists, and sorcerers. Another divineress, Marie Bosse, was famously the enemy of Catherine Lavoisin. Marie was another prominent influence in the dark dealings of Paris, known for her potions, poisons, and alleged witchcraft. It was because of Marie Bosse that Catherine took her practices further. To get a business advantage over Marie, Lavoisin leaned into the witchcraft facade, offering black masses for certain results clients asked for in their lives. She first told her clients that their wishes would come true if it was the will of God. This would lead them to visit a church to pray. Then they would buy a charm or a potion from her. And if that didn't work, then they would offer black masses for those who were too desperate. These black masses required the steepest sums from her clients. She hired satanic priests for these instances. They involved multiple people from her network to perform these rituals with the client in attendance, some of which took place in a section of the catacombs near Lavoisin's residence. Most of these rituals consist of a nude woman acting as the altar, where a chalice would be placed on her abdomen. The records say that the priest would then cut into an infant, draining the blood into the chalice. It's not known if these children were alive or deceased before this ritual took place. It's believed that Lavoisin used the fetuses from the abortions she carried out for these masses, or even the children she took under her wing for the poor mothers who can no longer take care of their small children. The severity of the risks she took shifted in 1673 when the mistress of the king paid her a visit. Madame de Montespan was in distress. She and the king had been lovers for many years, but his eyes began to wander to another. Frantic to remain in the king's favor, she gave him love potions and lured him in with her charms. She regularly used aphrodisiacs in his food and drink. She had won him over time and time again. She was a mother of seven of his children. She couldn't bear to be tossed to the side. She would do whatever it took to stay in La Rosalie's affections. Montespan agreed to participate in a black mass. Over time, she saw Louis XIV still take on other lovers. The realization was cemented when he took Angélique de Fontage as his lover. Madame de Montespan visited Lavoisin again in a fury, pleading for her help. She demanded the deaths of de Fontage and the king himself. Catherine was taken aback by this extreme request, but she did finally agree. This was not a feat to be done overnight. This would take time. With everyone at her disposal in her network, she began to orchestrate a plan. The morbid reality of Catherine's decisions were not lost on her. but she continued to play the game. A game that would seal her fate. On March 5th, 1679, La Voisin found herself in the Sun King's court. She sought him on his throne. In her possession was a petition for the king to review and sign. The document had been brushed with a poison. Her intention was that he would touch the poisoned piece and it would absorb into his skin. Fortunes bowed in the king's favor. On that particular day, there were too many people waiting for the king to hear their requests. She waited and waited, but her turn never came. Their plan had failed. This wasn't the only thing she was worried about. Panic had been spreading in the Parisian underbelly. People with her type of skills were being rounded up, arrested, beaten, taken in for questioning, and tortured. Lieutenant General La Reynie had been conducting investigations for the king. King Louis XIV caught wind of alleged plots against him. As the king's paranoia grew, so did the police frenzy. He had every right to worry. Little did he know, he dodged his demise another day. But La Voisin wouldn't only try again. Her coin purse wasn't the only thing weighing heavy on her. A week later, she would be arrested as she stepped out from Notre Dame de Bonne Nouvelle. The police were just following standard protocol. Every alchemist, fortune teller, and magician would be brought in, regardless of their level of influence. In her residence, they had found everything they needed to bring her in for questioning. And she knew this time, fate had caught up with her. 5 days after her arrest, her previous lover and associate, Adam Lesage, was also arrested. He told all. His accusations against Catherine hardened with other prisoners who confessed similar information about her, adding details that were matching what they found on her premises. Little black books of alchemy, an oven, small bones, and so much more. But one document that contained the list of her clients would send all of France into absolute mayhem. Thank you for listening to this special presentation and limited series on Macabre, a dark history podcast. Stay tuned for Macabre features in the future, where together we will uncover the darkest parts of history.